Welcome back to Maniacs, the official podcast of the WVU student section.
Welcome back to the podcast. First off, we beat Pitt. The backyard brawl was in Morgantown last weekend, and we found a way to will ourselves to a win. Pitt did not look great, but that's a win in Neil Brown's category, and we're going to take it. Welcome to the podcast. I'm here with Brandon Nicewanger. I'm going to make sure I continue to get that correct every single time. and we are also here with the great Ty McClung. He's here with us as well. And a missing person from the podcast, Sir William Kent, is not with us today. Make sure to quote tweet this and blast him for not being a part of it. But I think we're going to build the brand up with him out, with him not here. And it's going to be a great day. So we're just going to start off with some Pitt takeaways. It was a great game. And how do you guys feel about the weekend and the game that we witnessed?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Tyler. I'm just glad to be here without Will.
Really, I was about to say, Tyler, when you said that, a giant smile rose on Brandon's face.
You know, we recorded this podcast on Tuesday this week. And I'll tell you one thing, Will and I are both big Steelers fans, right? Not to talk about the Pittsburgh sports team in a positive light this week, but I had to watch that Steelers-Browns game with him yesterday, and Will and I don't have very many similar opinions on anything, like life in general, like the value of being able to run an offense, things of that, whether or not to go for two, and again, you don't have 100 rushing yards on a season. But nonetheless, Will and I were in good spirits after the Mountaineers win on Saturday, yes, which was tons of fun. Yeah, I can say safely that it's one of the most fun games I've ever attended. It's very rare that you get to go in and play a Power 5 football team and hold them to zero touchdowns. But after all, we were practically playing a team from a Group of 5 conference. So, I guess it's not really that much different than when we beat Pat Narduzzi when he was at Cincinnati several years back. Mm-hmm. You know, it's it's just a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, first off, great game. Great performance by the Mountaineers. Mm. The crowd was absolutely amazing.
Great game is an interesting way to put it.
Anytime you come away with a win, I think you can say great game. Unless you're the Steelers. Last night was not a great game for the Steelers.
Sure.
But Saturday was a great game for the Mountaineers. You know, I think the crowd was probably the best crowd I've seen since 2011 LSU. You know, I think everybody was there. I mean, the stadium was full 40 minutes before kickoff. So, I mean, I think that's just a testament to Mountaineer pride.
Mm, yeah, and that's the thing that people really forget to report when they talk about the attendance is how early was everybody there? Right? How late did everybody stay? I mean, everybody was there. It is in Country Roads, which is rare. Most people do, try to beat traffic. You know, people who are there every game don't necessarily keep caring about it as much as I think that they ought to. Although after staying in that traffic for a while, I guess I can understand where they're coming from.
It was a little rough. I won't lie.
But, I was calling for a tailgate part two. I don't know why everybody kept leaving. Right. I figured it was like, let's keep this thing going. A couple people joined me. It was a lot of fun, but, I hate to give credit to my ultimate bad guy, but I'm glad that the sports media scheduled this game to be a night game, right? It was a lot of fun. It really gave me some 2018 Oklahoma vibes, which at first was not very good for very many reasons, right? It was just a warmer version of that game, but I'm not sure what I can compare it to. It kind of did feel like the 2011 Pitt game eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the backyard brawl should be played at night every year. Mm-hmm. I think it's a night game that needs to be played. I do like having it in the beginning of the season, we have for the next couple of years, but I do miss the Black Friday games.
Right. Well, that's the thing is that I don't want to say I'm getting old by any means. I'm not, but I'm older than both of you guys. I'm 22. Just started my first year of law school, right? Not even undergrad anymore. And watched plenty of WVU Pitt games when I was younger, and it's still weird to me that it's warm out when we play Pitt, right? We've always played Pitt on Thanksgiving weekend. And I'm not sure if I miss that or not anymore. I think I'm just glad that it's played.
Mm-hmm. I think more than anything, it's a game that needs to be played, not just we want it, they want it type of deal. Like,
yeah, sign it for 100 years.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Like, there's no better anticipation for a game than the WVU Pitt game. And it doesn't matter how good either team is. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be one of those games. It's going to be a dirty game. It's not going to be a game that a lot of people look into and are like, wow, that was one of the best college football games I've seen in years. You know, it's just going to be a gritty rivalry. We hate them, you hate us type of game. And I genuinely think this weekend proved that. I mean, Mountaineer Nation was out there early. Like, even when we got there early, and there were people in the blue lot from the second we got there to the second that we left. Yeah.
I think our state showed their neighborhood what a fan base is.
Mm, that's true. Yeah. That's what a combination of hype video quotes there, Ty. which honestly, what was that? Rasheed Marshall who did that?
That one went hard.
That was, yeah. I was surprised that we let that fly. I like it. But I mean, that's pretty awesome. You know,
I think one of the best clips of the night though was the tombstone clip.
Oh, with, yeah.
You know, Kurt Russell is Wyatt Earp. Mm. If you know what I'm talking about, you know, but that one was tough.
In terms of people getting there early, we I save our tailgating spot, of course, and got there around 5, right? And there were about 40 cars ahead of me. So it was, I mean, not only was it a long day, but it was just really, really, really fun. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I just love playing Pitt, right? I mean, that's the way we should do things. Now, Virginia Tech, on the other hand, after they try to pull that little stunt and not schedule us for like 12 years and keep the trophy, I think we should do the exact same thing to them. I mean, encase that thing in concrete and bury it somewhere and don't tell anybody.
I miss the Twitter account that kept posting how many days we've had the Black Diamond trophy. I mean, somebody's got to take that over because that made my day every single morning.
We need one of those since the Oakland Zoo, the petting zoo up north, the official student section for Pitt, quote unquote, athletics. You think it would be academics, but the way they tweet, but of course it's not. They were tweeting basketball highlights a couple of days ago, which, I mean, you want to talk about countdowns. We should have a countdown for the last time that WVU has lost a Pitt in basketball. In case if you're wondering, at the time of this recording on Tuesday, September 19th, 2023, it has been 4,250 days. Mm-hmm. So go ahead and write that down. Put it in your pipe and smoke it.
I mean, we can go ahead and add another 365 to that because – all right, but they're not going to beat the boys in Morgantown this year. But, you know, I am looking forward to taking the trip up north to the petting zoo and seeing, you know, Coach Kellogg and the women's team beat Pitt.
Yeah, it should be fun. I mean, I can't imagine that it'll have many fans there. They never do.
Well, I mean, they had – I think we estimated around 15, and I think we saw 16 or 17 – you know, at the game Saturday. So, you know.
That's true. Yeah. That's,
and that you could easily point them out because they were the only ones leaving.
Right.
With 5 minutes left.
It was a lot of fun to see the single bus of fans that they brought down, you know, file out after.
And all their fans had helmets too. Mm-hmm. You know, protective helmets.
That's right. Yeah. Great call by Coach Pat Narduzzi there. I mean, what a stunt that is.
What a clown.
I absolutely despise him. I said on the last podcast, I think that everything he does is falsified, drama-filled nonsense that he just spews out to try to keep them relevant. I mean, there is no reason for him to do that stuff if it's not to get... He thinks, obviously, that any media attention is good media attention, which is a pretty bad way to run a football program. And you know, I'm starting to really lose my train of thought here. I get so filled with anger when we're talking about him. We had to re-record this a couple of times just due to the, how would we say this? The nature of the topic.
The intense rage.
Yeah. I don't like him. We'll leave it at that.
You know, and, you know, Tyler, you mentioned it earlier, you know, Pitt did not look good. And, you know, but, you know, I can't wait for, speaking of Narduzzi, I can't wait for him to
watch,
you know,
the film.
To, we're going to look at the film. You know, we're going to look at
the film. Going to look at the film. Actually,
you guys want to blame it on one person. Mm-hmm. It's not one person's fault. I think it
Let me retract my statement. I love Pat Narduzzi, and it is because he keeps Pitt football completely irrelevant and on a chain, right? I mean, it really does, because this is a football team that should probably be bowl eligible, and I can't see them beating anybody in the country.
Well, if Pat goes back and watches the film, it's not going to look too great. I mean, Sir Phil threw more passing yards to West Virginia players than he did to Pitt players.
He was, our leading passer. I mean, Beanie
Bishop was Pitt's leading receiver. So it rough game for the Panthers, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Although, I mean, you know, they were trying to, to us when they said that Phil was our leading passer, which tells you one thing. One, I mean, he threw three interceptions. Like, ooh, yeah, that's gotcha. And second thing is, we just ran the ball all game, which was electric. You know, when you look at the score, you don't think, and to kind of get actually into like the game a little bit, you don't think that we necessarily dominated them, but we did. Other than their first drive, they could not move the ball on us. No. And other than our, like, the first three drives, once you saw Nico get comfortable, I mean, you know, we had just enough of a threat of vertical movement on the field to be able to move the ball horizontally and then up.
Right, and we did exactly what we needed to do to win. You know, we had talked about the strength of the offensive line last week and, you know, how we needed to get the run game established. And C.J. Donaldson and Jalen Anderson had a heck of a game between the two of them.
And you know what? Good special teams, too. Yeah. Something that shocked me, right, was that it was our ability to swing field position with punts. And
Oliver Straw is a genius.
I mean, shout out to our kicker too with the 42 yarder, I think it was, to be able to hit that down.
Preston Fox had a really nice return to the sideline, you know, on a punt. You know, he was able to push it out. So even if he had muffed it, it would have went out of bounds and been our ball anyway. I think it was a smart decision to try and, you know, get a couple yards instead of being put down at the one.
I know. I mean, you know, people talk about special teams winning games. They really do. I mean, when you think about this Pitt offense not really being able to move the ball very much, and we have a punter that can trap them on the 2-yard line and have to make them go 98 yards rather than, you know, 80 is a big difference, right? And that's huge. I mean, to be frank, it's a difference of 18 yards, right? If they complete a 20-yard pass over the middle, they're barely where they started to, and they weren't completing very many of those.
Yeah.
I think a thing, too, is, like, we did what we have been saying that they should do for the longest time. Our secondary looked good, and we ran the football. And at the end of the day, if you can do those two things, you're going to stop people from scoring, and you're going to score the football. And we didn't look, like, amazing. But at the end of the day, we destroyed Pitt and we beat them how we had to. And
right.
It's a win in the column.
And it's something that's interesting about a game like this. It feels like you get more than one win in the column with this. Right. We were going into this game thinking that this was the last thing on the schedule to play for, which is always unfortunate about playing this game so early, right? That's why I love playing it late. But, you know, when you win a game like this and you dominate your rival, it's becomes interesting, right? Like, we're looking at Texas Tech in the next segment here, and we're going to look at a team that, you know, we probably wouldn't have had very much confidence in beating after Duquesne, but we just lined the ball up and, you know, beat Pitt and are starting to look back at the Penn State loss and thinking, well, how bad was that? Right. Yeah. And like we were able to stop them and move the ball on them. They got a garbage time touchdown. So where are we at? Right. And that's what I think is interesting. We're seeing Oklahoma State's not good. Texas Tech, I guess, is a dark horse in the Big 12. Iowa State might be one of the worst Big 12 football programs I've seen since, like, what, 2015 Kansas was, I mean, was the really bad one, right?
The entirety of the Big 12 just looks rough. Besides maybe Texas, you could just put them on the upper echelon. But
and even Texas, it's still September. Give them
exactly. Oh, yeah. Give them a time to lose one of these weird games, and nobody will talk about them for the rest of the season. It's going
to
be a rough.
People like to forget that Texas lost to Kansas twice in the span of what? Three or four years?
Yeah, three years, I think. I think they lost to them. I think it was on the road and at home, right? Mm-hmm. So they certainly lost to them at home in the triple overtime game or something. But, you know, I just have to believe that Texas has a game on their schedule that's going to be the equivalent to them playing like Charlotte University, and they're going to lose by 40. I haven't even looked at it. I just imagine
maybe we should call their AD and let them schedule Pitt. You know,
that's true.
Maybe we should feel bad for him and just give him one more win.
That would be great. Yeah, let him schedule 13 games. Why not? Actually, but you know, really, again, looking at the actual aspects of this game last week, I don't know if I was more shocked that we lined up and ran the ball when they knew we were going to do that, or if our secondary rose to the occasion. And I think it's probably the secondary, right? We mean, you know, a lot of this is Phil Yurkovich or Jerkovic, whatever, is a lot of this is just him playing bad, just him playing poorly at all. But you know, as we just mentioned about the Big 12, not necessarily a ton of strong quarterbacks this year. You need a secondary that can capitalize on those types of things. You know, when you're playing these slow games, getting flips in field position by like 80 yards, I mean, you know, those are the differences. Mm-hmm. And especially when you can do it three times.
Wrapping up on this talk about the Pitt game, when we get back from this little break, we're going to kind of give a preview for the Texas Tech game and give our keys on what we need to see this next weekend.
Saturday, 3:30. A gold rush comes to Morgantown as the Mountaineers battle the Red Raiders of Texas Tech. Gentlemen, what do we need to do to finally get over the hump that is Neil Brown coaching against Tech to win this game?
I can feel the rush in your voice. You're really excited.
I'm ecstatic after last week's
win. I said it a couple weeks ago that I needed to see us go 3-0. Being Duquesne, Pitt, and Tech, that those were non-negotiable games for me. Duquesne is obvious. Pitt seems even more obvious. And if you haven't followed WVU football in a while, we haven't beat Texas Tech since 2019. So
they've been our kryptonite for a while.
So. Or 18. Oh, that's right. I forgot that. Oh, my. Jeez. Yeah. Wow. Been a while.
Since the days of Willie G.
I know. I was starting to think that was 2019, but yeah. Now I'm really starting to feel it. That's not good. It's not a good feeling at all.
No. And we, you know, two of those games have been one score games. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look back to 2020 and 2021, you know, we lose both. Yeah.
2021 first, at home with a botched Hail Mary play with.
Well, I don't know if you can call it. Well, I guess you could call it botch. We just didn't even get the snap off.
Right.
You know? And in 2020, we play tight, and then we have a fumble return for a touchdown with 4 minutes left. And that, you know, and then you look at 2019 was a bit of a blowout at home. Last year was certainly not what we wanted to see at all.
You know, the blowout at home in 2019 was strange too, because we seemed like we were starting to figure things out, right?
Especially offensively. I thought offensively we played better, but defensively we just collapsed. I guess
people started to figure us out, right? It was the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But looking ahead here, this is a Texas Tech team that lost to Oregon by, I think, 7, right? Is that correct?
And, yeah, 38-30. So, yeah, by 8.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and, you know, that's something that I think we need to keep our eyes on. But the nature of this is I think Coach Brown is aware of this, right? He mentioned that, you know, nobody in the locker room had beat Texas Tech, although I think we realized that Malachi Ruffin.
Yeah, Malachi came up to him and reminded him.
Right, but that was pretty cool. But I think that when you only have one player on your roster that's beat a team that you play every year, that should let some people on the roster know that it needs to happen, right? That this is a little bit more than what it normally is.
And I think a big thing, especially this season, when it comes to our overall record, is winning at home. Mm-hmm. If we go 3-0 at home to start the season, it's going to look great as we continue down the road of mm-hmm. our season. There's some environments we're going to have to go play in. I don't think they're going to be any bigger than the WVU Pitt game. But when we look at the entire span of the season, I think defending our home turf and making sure that when we have WVU fans at those games, that those guys are playing for us and that we're cheering for them. A big thing is just winning those games at home, ticking up those win numbers, and continuing to play good while we have our fans there.
And that's what's interesting. So having 3 home games in a row, I hated when the schedule came out, and I still kind of do. But there still is one positive out of this, and that it gives you an advantage of winning 3 games in a row, which can help you win road games.
Yep. Right? And carry it has momentum not for- happened, though, under Neil Brown's tutelage here.
No, that's true. Well, the coach is definitely better at home than mm-hmm. he is on the road. There's no doubt about it. Actually, I think in 2020, we went 6-6, right? Mm-hmm. And the only game we won on the road was the bowl game.
Yep.
So that's interesting. But and I think it was a very similar split up the next year for the Guaranteed Rate Bowl, right? So which we did, of course, lose on the road as well. True. But I think that you know, 3 home games in a row, if it can present this opportunity to win 3 in a row, you can go into this TCU game 3-1, a TCU team that I still don't necessarily know if is very good, and a team that Coach Brown has actually had pretty good luck against coaching in his tenure. Both the teams that wear purple in this league, TCU and Kansas State, the coach seems to do very well against.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, when we talk about keys to the game, you know, this week, I think continued play by the secondary or continued above average play from the secondary just has to be one of the things you're looking at. When you look at the stats from Texas Tech, Tyler Shough, you know, he's thrown for 743 yards this year. He's thrown for 7 touchdowns through the course of 3 games, but he's also thrown 4 picks.
Right.
And, you know, in the last 2 games, we've had 5 interceptions on the defensive side of the football, and that's more than we had all of last season. Mm-hmm. So I think that the secondary, you know, they heard the criticism from fans, and, you know, last week they stepped up. I think this Saturday they're going to continue to step up and show that they know who they are, they know what they can do, and they're going to show us.
I think my key for the game is just running the football down people's throats. At the end of the day, if we continue to gain yards, chew clock, it's going to give our defense the ability to stay on the sideline to get some rest, calm down, and it's right. going to help out our secondary, because if we can stay on the field and just run the ball down people's throats, I think it's going to be really good for our offense, and we're going to continue to score points.
Well, I agree. And, you know, I think that's, you know, it's very interesting. Texas Tech doesn't run the ball very well, and that's not something that should surprise anybody. I mean, that's just not their brand. But not only do they not run the ball very well, but we don't let teams run the ball on us very well either. Our defensive game plan seems to cater at daring people to throw the ball rather than allowing people to rush the ball, which is a good way to manage the clock, right? At the very least, if you're going to score, their defense is probably still going to only be out there for 3 or 4 plays rather than, you know, 20 real life minutes like you saw in the Pitt game with us, right? Which is, again, why when we talk about like all the injuries that Pitt was sustaining, and you could see all these people cramping, and our fans are booing them, thinking they faked injuries. Like, they're out there having to tackle CJ Donaldson for 25 minutes straight without any breaks. I think it's better that they were actually getting tired and cramping and getting injured.
I think they just need to be in the weight room a little bit more.
Well, that's the other thing. I don't know who their strength coach is or conditioning, but like, you know.
Might need to consider a rehire at that position. Yeah, because I mean, it looked a little rough like on Saturday.
One or two is understandable, but I mean, one of the final drives, I mean, they really did.
There was like four or five guys go down back to back to back.
And it's not with any benefit either, right? Like they get back up and the clock was stopped, but when they put the ball back down and say, let's play again, it starts right back up with a full game clock, right? So, but I mean, you know, at Texas Tech, I think our goal is this week to shorten the game, right? Let's shorten the game, give people less chances on offense, which means if they make a mistake, it's going to cost more, right? It's going to be a more valuable mistake. And you need to capitalize on your red zone opportunities. We didn't do a very good job of that again. Seemed like Nico had that one fumble on his first drive there. And that's something that I necessarily can't blame him for.
Right.
I mean, you know, you've had like 12 career passing attempts ever. And he got thrown into a game against our biggest rival at home when we were losing and not with very much momentum. So he recovered well, of course, and didn't make a mistake the rest of the game, I don't think. So it's hopefully we can just stay disciplined on offense, do what we need to do, and wreak havoc on defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were talking about shortening the game time. I think if you look at the Pitt game, I think the total runtime of that game was just under 2.5 hours, one of the shortest college football games I've ever watched. I think it was because, you know, we were so effective running the ball. Pitt was so ineffective in general. I mean,
that's true. I mean, they were ineffective. Ineffective is actually a very good word to describe their performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how there's no positives to be had for them. And other than their kicker, I guess he can make a field goal, but that's his job. So,
And, their tight end, I think his name was Bartholomew. Mm-hmm. He's a beast.
Oh, yeah. He's a big guy.
I think the Steelers will probably draft him because he just seems like the type of guy the Steelers would draft. But, you know, again, with Texas Tech here, it's a difficult game to analyze. This is a completely different team than we've played. We've been playing, Western Pennsylvanian teams that run this slow game plan. And I mean, even Penn State with all their talent, they weren't throwing the ball every single play, right? They were trying to run the ball down the field. But, you know, it's rather interesting to try to think about how our defense will respond to a team that wants to throw the ball more than they run the ball.
Okay, our next segment is going to be by none other than Tyler Falstick himself with his Tyler's Sportsbook Steals. Take it away, pal.
Welcome back to the weekly segment, Tyler's Sportsbook Steals. This is the one segment that I genuinely prepare before I come into the show. So
it's obvious.
I usually sound a little better when I'm doing this. So we're going to start off. I got 6 game picks, and then the WVU line isn't out. The line is out right now. It's going to change throughout the week, I'd imagine. And there's currently no player props available right now, so I'm not really going to give you a WVU parlay. But we'll start it off. I think Rutgers cover the 24.5 at No. 2 Michigan. Michigan has not been great against the spread this season, and I think Rutgers is honestly a dark horse team to put up some points this year, and I think they'll keep it not super close. I think Michigan's definitely going to get the win, but I think they're going to cover the 24.5. This is more of a heart pick for me, even though it's Marshall. I have Marshall -5.5 playing VT at home. I think in the Joan, they're going to be able to beat Virginia Tech this year. Virginia Tech does not look great, so I think Marshall's going to be able to get the win there and cover the 5.5.
Yeah, I think my high school's JV football team could beat Virginia Tech this year.
A rough football team, and I'm glad we don't play them this year because it would kind of be, like you said, just playing another FCS team. So
America has to watch Virginia Tech play Pitt this week or this year, and I'm not sure.
I don't wish that upon my worst enemy. Right, like
the Iowa State game is probably going to be
better. Can both teams lose? Like, do they allow ties or
they should change the rules? They should change the rules.
Yeah, I think we need to let's get working on that.
Moving on, we got number 19, Colorado. I have them covering, which I thought this line was a lie when I first saw it. 21 points at number 10, Oregon. I know Travis Hunter went down. The injury was, it was rough. I think he like lacerated his like.
Lacerated his liver.
Yeah, his liver. It was a rough injury, but I think Colorado still with Shedeur Sanders. I know I hated on him earlier in the year. I hated that team. I took TCU like minus 20 and a half against them the first game.
Well, I think we all thought that was going to happen.
And I'm not sure if you can give out gambling advice if you took that.
Well, I just, that was more purely from a hatred of Deion Sanders, and I'm coming around slowly, but if ESPN keeps posting 15 times a day about the team, it's going to make me lose my mind.
I don't hate him. I hate ESPN, and that's nothing new.
Oh, my God.
Nothing new. Now, Deion and his mom, I don't know if you guys saw that in the locker room. So, you know, these aren't things that you could probably say on the podcast, but he was saying how he only gets mad when people insult him or his mom or his team. Right. And he said that the Colorado State's coach was insinuating that his mom didn't raise him right.
Oh,
right. And brother. He brought his mom into the locker room and she said that he raised him right. And he said, I also told you what, you know, that, and these are things, you know, when we kick some, we need to kick some. And that's a, it's an abbreviated radio appropriate version of the tweet, but you know, it's, it was, go get yourself on Twitter and look it up. It's
sure
great.
I'm going to have to look at it. I do respect Deion Sanders to literally just not care what people think and just put out whatever he wants. The pettiness is great. I love a good petty game, especially with the Pitt game. I love myself a petty game. Mm-hmm. But moving on to finish these out, Oklahoma State at Iowa State. I have Iowa State covering -3.5. I think they're both bad teams, but I think OK State looks really rough, and I'm honestly just taking the home team here. I think whoever's at home is going to be able to win that game.
Yeah, I don't know whose seat is hotter right now, Matt Campbell or Mike Gundy's.
I mean, it looks rough for the both of them. It's not looking great, especially Mike Gundy losing by like 30 to South Alabama last week. It looks hot in the kitchen, and I'm just glad to not be a fan of that team right now. And hopefully we can pull out the win at Texas Tech or at home against Texas Tech. Next game, I have number 6, Ohio State at number 9, Notre Dame. I'm sticking with my Heisman pick. I'm taking Notre Dame +3.
Embarrassing.
Probably would take a money line just because that man has not been stopped yet, and I don't think he's going to be stopped all year. Give me that man winning. Give me the Irish. And then another pick that is practically free money. Number 17, UNC -7.5 at Pitt. I think UNC is probably going to put about 40 points on Pitt's head. And that Pitt team is not ready to handle Drake May and the boys. They're going to go in there and get a dirty win, and it's going to be a great time to be a UNC fan. And then for my WVU bet, the line's at +6.5 for WVU right now. Hammer the line, hammer money line, and let's go get a win this weekend, boys.
I'll get a quick Brandon's Bold take in here as well. And that we're really looking forward to LSU playing the Arkansas Razorbacks, right? I think Arkansas and LSU are both banged up after their games last week. And I really do think that this type of matchup after Arkansas lost what I think is a horrible, horrible, horrible game to BYU, that they can really bounce back and over prepare for this game and circle it on the schedule. It's one that everybody wants to win, right? We forget that these states are actually so close in proximity and are kind of somewhat geographically removed from the SEC about as much as you can be in that conference other than Texas A&M or Missouri. But, you know, of the original kind of southeastern college football teams, these people have hated each other for a while, right? So I think we can see Arizona preparing for this game, trying to mitigate their loss against BYU and really coming out and shocking some people. And Kelly, I really don't understand, I don't think understands the culture quite yet for LSU, right? I mean, he's coached at Notre Dame, which of course is a completely different school. And just, I don't think has had a time to settle in and really get what it means yet. So, we'll see how both of these schools can prepare themselves when they're both underperforming. And I have more faith in Arkansas, bouncing back this season, than LSU.
And ladies and gentlemen, before we go, we have a quick update about our men's soccer team. Ty, would you like to continue with that?
Of course. Folks, I said it last week that Coach Stratt has the boys rolling, and that has continued. Last Friday night, they traveled to Orlando to take on the Knights of Central Florida, came away with a 2-2 draw, a really great game, and it was enough to get the Mountaineers to jump up in the polls to number 2. The highest rating in team and school history. At the time of this recording, the Mountaineers are 5-0-1. They're currently, right now, playing the Dayton Flyers. Quick stats update. Sophomore Marcus Caldera, first tied for first in the nation with 7 goals this season. At the time of the podcast, he has scored in every single game. Senior goalkeeper Jackson Lee and the Mountaineer defense only giving up 0.05 goals per game, which is ninth best in the country. We need to keep this momentum rolling. So after the Mountaineers hopefully win tonight against Dayton, which I think they will, Friday night at 7 o'clock, the Mountaineers take on the Eagles of Georgia State University. Georgia Southern University.
Bums.
But I wanted to end with this. There is a monopoly on college soccer state of West Virginia.
There is.
Little Brother
Mountain
University.
Mama, baby.
All respect to them for winning a national title. Marshall University is currently ranked first in the country with the Mountaineers coming in at number 2.
It's it was a cupcake national title during COVID.
Yeah, during really COVID. So we'll,
it's practically the bubble title for the Lakers. It doesn't count.
But respect to Coach Grassi. The boys in Huntington are number 1. We're number 2. You know, a perfect scenario would be that we're both going to be undefeated here in about a month, but I don't think Marshall can stay undefeated that long. I don't think we have any issue with it. But one to circle, folks, put it on the calendar. The Mountain State Derby coming to Morgantown, October 18th at 8 p.m. Dick DeLesque Soccer Stadium is going to be roaring as we look to avenge last season's loss and continue our winning ways against the thundering herd of Marshall.
That's right, Ty. The boys are buzzing, and it's exciting. You know, it's a who would have thought 10 years ago that we could have gone on a podcast here and say that West Virginia is the soccer capital of college athletics, but it is right now, right? And hopefully it stays that way through us and not through Marshall. But I think that kind of wraps up everything that we had on the podcast for this week. And we look forward to that 3:30 kick versus Texas Tech on Saturday. Make sure you wear gold. If you don't have a gold t-shirt, then you obviously haven't gotten your Maniac t-shirt yet. Make sure you get that at our office between the hours of 10 and 2. And I think that's it. So let's go.
Mountaineers.
Cue it.
Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads, take me home. Memories you to blue water. Dark and dusty, painted on the sky. Misty taste of moonshine, teardrop in my eye. Country roads, take me home to the place. Yesterday, country road.